Court. My name is Bob Palmer, and I represent Cheryl Burns in this case. There are two primary issues in this case. The first issue is whether federal common law fills in the ERISA statute requiring a spousal consent to be witnessed. The second issue is what does the statute mean by the word witness? There's
mean
no dispute.
I didn't hear you.
I'm
what
sorry.
Does the statute mean by what?
By the word witness.
Well, I think that's clear, right? That's a witness to the signature, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. And in this case, there's no dispute that Mr. Burns and Mrs. Burns were not together when the document was signed. Mr. Burns signed it on February 24th, 2003. Mrs. Burns signed it on February 25th, 2003. This was not simply a mistake in the date. It was typed into the form three or four different times. Going back to the other issue, assuming you're correct, Your Honor, on the definition of witness, the Kennedy case, which we cite, is a recent Supreme Court case, which essentially ruled that federal common law cannot fill in any gaps for clear, unambiguous words in the ERISA statute. Kennedy originally was granted cert to discuss or resolve a split between circuits on whether or not a quattro, qualified domestic relations order, was required to comply with the ERISA waiver statutes. The court then said, after looking at it, they expanded the question before it, saying, we subsequently realized that this case implicates a further split over whether a beneficiary's federal common law waiver of plan benefits is effective where that waiver is inconsistent with the plan documents. And the court came down very firmly on the side of plan documents rule. You have to comply with the plan documents. You're not permitted, the plan administrator is not permitted to go out, investigate, look at a multitude of different facts, and then to make a decision on whether or not the waiver is valid. The plan administrator is simply limited to looking at the plan, looking at the statute, and determining whether the actions that took place on the waiver comply with the terms of the plan and the statute itself.
Well, these were plan documents to the extent that they were forms that were generated pursuant to the plan for use for making these beneficiary election decisions, right? These weren't completely extraneous documents. They were plan documents. It's just the question arises whether they were executed properly or had the proper line items for the signatures of the witness or notary.
Your Honor, the plan sponsor furnished the documents. On those documents, there were signature forms, signature blanks for witnesses and notaries. Someone at Orthotech took those off. So the plan documents were modified and changed to eliminate the requirement of a witness or a notary.
So there was a defect in the form. It's not that they weren't planned documents, which was the issue in Kennedy. It's that there was a defect in the form.
Correct.
Because somebody had
taken out
the signature lines.
Correct. And under the district court's findings, that someone was more than likely Dr. Burns, because he was the fiduciary, he was the plan administrator, he was the employer, he was the participant. The district court ruled that it was somebody at Orthotech that removed those signature lines for the notary and the witness. We did a fair discussion on whether or not the arbitrary and capricious standard review applies or whether or not de novo applies. I just want to touch on that briefly. While it's true that if the plan administrator has discretion, that it's an arbitrary and capricious standard of review. However, that arbitrary and capricious standard of review and the de novo standard of review can both exist for the same documents. And in this case, I believe that that happens. The arbitrary and capricious standard review would apply to decisions that were within the plan administrator's discretion. However, the plan administrator does not have the discretion to ignore the statute, which requires the signature of a witness or a notary, nor the plan itself, which requires the signature of a notary or a witness. The only thing
Why be so rigid? People are constantly making mistakes, and they're usually forgiven. There's no real doubt that she signed it, right? So why don't we allow the plan to forgive that error?
The reason we're rigid, Your Honor, is because of the Supreme Court case.
There's absolutely no reason to think it's not her signature.
There's no reason to think that it's not her signature. However, she does not remember signing it.
So what? A lot of things that happen that people don't remember. Why would she remember signing a document? She signed a million of them. Why should she remember this one? The point is, it's her signature. And so the question is, what policy is served by saying, no matter how obvious it is, that the omission of the signature line, or the witness line, is inconsequential, inadvertent, harmless, still you have to have this forfeiture? I mean, why? What policy is being served?
The policy being served, Your Honor, is discussed in the Shea case, especially, about ensuring a stream of revenue to a surviving spouse.
No. That's why it's very important that she actually have signed it. That's not the issue. She signed it. This is just seeking a windfall. We know that she signed the waiver. You're seeking a windfall because of failure to comply with the technicality of the statute. As you say, the purpose of the witness requirement is to try to protect the spouse. Well, and that would be very significant if there was some question whether she had signed it. But since she signed it, the purpose of the statute has been fulfilled. The spouse was protected. It'd be different if the purpose of, if the witness were required to, you know, say to the affiant, you know what you're doing, this is very grave, you're giving, you know, that sort of thing. Or satisfying himself, the witness, that she's of sound mind, that sort of thing. But isn't that just a signature? So if we know it's a signature, why fuss about the missing witness signature?
I believe we should fuss about the missing witness signature, Your Honor, because precedent from the United States Supreme Court and decisions from other circuits have ruled that you look only to the plan documents themselves.
I mean, it's like the Middle Ages. What you're saying, in effect, is Congress cared so much about spouses that it wanted them to get benefits even if they weren't entitled to them because they'd actually signed them away.
Your Honor, the finding that she signed them away only becomes important because the plan administrator went far beyond the plan documents and looked at, got signature cards from her, looked at all the other documents she signed. Under the Supreme Court case in Kennedy, plan administrator should not do that. He should just simply look at the document and see if it complies with the plan and the statute. The plan and the statute both require a witness or a notary.
Well, we know that. We know that. Okay, thank you, Mr. Palmer. Mr. Casey?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Brian Casey. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, the Orthotech Employees Retirement Plan, as well as the independent fiduciaries. The district court got it right here. Judge Simon properly concluded, as did the plan's independent fiduciary two times before that, that Dr. Burns designated his three sons to be the recipients of his pension assets, and that Cheryl Burns, his wife, executed the required spousal consent. As a result, the requirements of Section 1055 C2 are satisfied. Ms. Burns now, as Judge Posner points out, is essentially seeking a windfall. The document, for whatever reason, lacked a signature line for the plan representative, but there's no doubt that she executed the document. In fact, she isn't even disputing that she executed the document. There's no doubt what Dr. Burns' intent was as in terms of designating the assets go to the three sons. And there's no doubt that Dr. Burns was the embodiment of the plan. He was the plan representative in every way, shape, or form. What the nub of this case is about is the witness requirement. And if you look at Section 1055 C2, it doesn't say it requires the signature of a witness, of a plan representative or a notary. It just says that the consent be witnessed by a plan representative or a notary. Here, the independent fiduciary, exercising his discretion based on the totality of the circumstances, made the factual determination that it was witnessed. It is the most reasonable inference that Dr. Burns signed the documents in multiple places, gave them to his wife. She signed them the next day. They live in the same house. There isn't any question of marital discord. She gave them back, and that's why they're in the plan files. It is that there isn't any suggestion that.
So Mr. Palmer's concern is that where do we stop, right? There will often be, ambiguities and so on about plan documents, irregularities, here failure to comply with the statute. So suppose she had said, no, I didn't sign it.
That would be a different question.
But would that then be a litigable question? So she's violated the statute. The plan has violated the statute, didn't have a witness place. So there's no witness signature. There's a signature that appears to be hers, but she says it's not mine. Now, at that point, do you say, well, the statute was violated, so she wins? Or do you say, well, we're going to have an evidentiary hearing to determine whether she signed it?
Well, in that instance, the most likely answer would be the independent fiduciary, according to the terms of the plan, Section 12.7, I believe, says you can look at any evidence that you believe to be appropriate and reliable in order to...
But you see, with that position, the statutory requirement begins to evaporate. Because in any case where you didn't have the witness, you could say, well, yeah, I don't have the witness, violation of the statute, but there is a signature here, and we're going to bring in handwriting experts and show that you really did sign it.
Well,
you've lost the benefit of the statute.
You're still looking at only documents that are plan documents. And what I'd like to point out is the...
You're looking at them, but you're disregarding the statute. The statute no longer has any force.
It still has force because you're still obligated to witness the... The consent needs to be witnessed by the plan representative. And here the fiduciary concluded that it was witnessed by the plan representative. The plan representative's
It wasn't witnessed in the sense of signed.
But that's not the only definition for witness. And I guess what I'd like to do is point you to the court's very recent...
What do you mean it's not the only? That's all the witness has to do is verify the signature of the...
No, Your Honor, ERISA doesn't say how a document has to be witnessed. It just says the consent needs to be witnessed by a plan representative or notary. And here the independent fiduciary concluded that it was witnessed by virtue of the
now
fact
that... Now you're taking a completely different tack. So suppose there's no witness at all, but absolutely no doubt as to her signature. So she says, yeah, that's my signature. I don't remember it, but that's my signature, so I must have signed it. If she says that... You still have to have a witness.
I would think at some point you do need to give weight to the witness requirement. We are not in any way reading the witness requirement out of the statute. But the court's recent decision in...
But the fact of that there was a witness, but he didn't sign anything, that seems a lot vaguer than... Someone saying, yeah, I signed it.
Well, you're not going to have this situation very often where you've got the plan representative married to the person who is, who the question is, did she sign it or not? So the plan.
But I'm interested in the case where someone says, yes, that's my signature, and yet there's no witness.
Well, that may be a situation where the requirements of the statute mean that she doesn't. It's a little unclear. That's more like Butler. And the court said that that would be absurd for her to admit that that's her signature and then still not get the effect of that. And the court's Ponsetti case demonstrates that you do still need to look at things beyond just the four corners. Judge Schwamm's decision just a couple months ago, there was a spousal consent in writing, and under plaintiff's or appellant's view of the world, that would be the end of the inquiry. What the independent fiduciary, or what the plan representative did is he then found out, though, that no, the notary subsequently signed an affidavit saying, I never actually witnessed this. And then she got evidence that the spouse was mentally incapacitated at the time. And what did the court do? They said that that's not a valid witness. If the appellants were right, you would just look at the four corners of that document and go, she signed it, that's the end of the inquiry. That's not what the Seventh Circuit said. That's not what Kennedy requires. Kennedy says, look at the plan documents. Here, every plan document designates the kids as the beneficiaries. No plan document designates Ms. Burns as the beneficiary. And therefore, we are, in fact, our position, as the district court noted, is supported by Kennedy. Because here, unlike Kennedy, where you had the plan documents saying the ex-wife gets it, and the non-plan documents saying, no, she doesn't want it. Here, every plan document says the kids get it. Now, we're buttressed by the fact that even the non-plan documents say that the kids get it, and that she was supposed to waive, waive the right to the pension plans and all that kind of stuff. But every plan document says that the kids get it. And she did it exactly the same way when she... signed the spousal consents for the pre-retirement distributions. This is their practice for years and years. And so to now say, oh, for the lack of a signature line, as though that's the only way that you can witness somebody signing stuff. Your Honor, if I were to sign a piece of paper right here, you would have witnessed it. You don't need to independently, have a line on this document saying, yeah, you happen to be here. You witnessed it if I signed the piece of paper. And that's sufficient, and particularly when, if you're talking about eligibility determinations, if you're talking about factual determinations, the independent fiduciary has the discretion to find the facts, and it should be reviewed under an arbitrary and capricious standard. But as Judge Simon noted, even under de novo review, this is still the right answer. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Casey. Mr. Palmer, do you have anything further? Okay.
Your Honor, on page 42 of our appendix, paragraph 36, the plan fiduciary, or the independent fiduciary, makes the finding whether Dr. Burns and Cheryl Burns were physically in the same location when she signed the waiver and consent forms, or whether they executed the documents precisely the same day is beside the point. Well, if they're not in the same room and they weren't there at the same time it was signed, they didn't witness it. And the only evidence in this case is that he signed it on February 24th, She signed it on February 25th. There's no evidence they were in the same place at the same time. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much to both counsel.